Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with William R. Ferris, chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. One of the toughest challenges that many employers are facing now is recruiting and retaining new employees. Does NEH have this problem?
I would say we have a problem with retaining employees, but our problem, like many federal agencies, is that we have a graying workforce, which is particularly acute in our situation because so many of our younger staff were cut when the 40% budget reductions came through a few years earlier. But we are slowly and steadily rebuilding this workforce as our staff retire. Then we are bringing in wonderful young leadership within the humanities, and many of whom are PhDs in various fields. And there's a great love for the endowment across the nation. And I think it's going to be exciting and easy to recruit highly professional, trained scholars who are interested in helping through the endowment to build the humanities all over the nation.
Will they come for a job that will last a career, or will they be moving back and forth to, say, academia?
Well, one can do both, but I think in most cases we will be bringing in people to work for a career. But it's also possible to come into the government for a year or two and to have that experience and then to go back into the university. But most of the examples that I'm familiar with within the agency indicate that once staff are there, they do not leave until they retire, because it's an extraordinarily exciting and moving experience to see institutions and individuals grow and flourish because, and I'm the best example. I mean, my whole career as a teacher and scholar and administrator would not have been possible without the NEH support. So I know full well that the kinds of advantages the endowment offers individuals are in direct relationship to the leadership we have at our agency. And these are leaders who become very personally involved, and they have a chance to watch over several decades sometimes a small institution grow and flourish, or an individual scholar who's totally unknown, a young Ken Burns, get help for his first film on Huey Long and then become one of the nation's greatest filmmakers. There are many examples like that. Ralph Applebaum, who designed the Holocaust Museum, began his career as an unknown designer for museums with NEH support. The examples that one can cite are many, and to bring staff in and to give them a chance literally to shape the nation for the better, I think is very appealing, and I look forward to seeing the growth and the development of young staff as they increasingly come to our agency.
What advice would you give to a young person who's interested in a career at NEH?
Well, I always tell young people to follow their hearts. Life is too short to do otherwise, and do what you love. And if you love the humanities and want to come to the NEH, then look at those positions that appeal to you most. In some cases, it might be working with research, and others with public programs. A person who has a strong background in film or radio would be much more challenged and excited by the public program sector. If you've done research and published books and so on, then the research division would be a more likely venue. But there's a wide range of wonderful opportunities within our agency, and each summer we bring in summer fellows who are college students, and they bring a wonderful new energy for the summer into the agency, and many of those are inspired and have indicated that they would like to come back, you know, after they finish their education and join our staff full time. And so there is a process here that clearly is exciting to the public, and we are never without wonderful choices when we're seeking to hire new staff.
Is there a key characteristic from your observation that separates the really excellent researchers or filmmakers from the other ones you see, from the Ken Burns, for example, from the other filmmakers?
Well, I think there are really no filmmakers who are not good. I mean, I'm a filmmaker myself, and I know a lot of what separates one filmmaker from another is simply the access to resources. And Ken Burns really is unique in his ability to raise support and to build institutions around the subjects he's done, such as the Civil War and jazz. And we seek not only to help the blockbuster productions, but to help the unknown filmmakers who are just beginning their career. We're launching support for filmmakers who are coming to us for the first time, and maybe $10,000 spread over 50 filmmakers, $10,000 each, will yield a handful of truly significant filmmakers over the next 50 years who will be household names in the ways that Ken Burns' name is today. So I think no one can distinguish between good, better, and best in scholarship, in filmmaking. We simply can't judge what a decade or two from now will be viewed as a very powerful and important grant. And many of our smallest grants have had this effect. We funded perhaps about $10,000 or $12,000 to a scholar to do a research project and a book on the Amistad incident about 25 years ago. Well, that book was one of the key resources for Steven Spielberg's wonderful film. We can point to many examples where we gave an archaeologist a modest amount of money to do work in Peru that led to the discovery eventually of the Ice Maiden. So our work moves in wonderful and mysterious ways, and I think these are all God's children that we support, and they're all very beautiful and significant work in our eyes. And I think as we look back over our 35 years, we can see the patterns of growth that have come in very unexpected ways that have blessed and enriched the lives of all Americans, thanks to this great institution, the National Endowment for the Humanities.
What does the future hold for the National Endowment of the Humanities? 5, 10 years out, what do you think it'll look like, and what do you think it'll be doing?
I think it will be hardly recognizable in terms of what we see now. First of all of our applications will be done electronically. We will have virtually every resource in our nation, presidential papers, family trees, the histories of local communities on websites that will all be linked, so that a student in the fifth grade in rural Montana will have equal access to the rich worlds of the Library of Congress, as rich as anyone in the country. And we will see the agency partnered in a very intimate way with the White House and Congress as we shape national and international policies, economic, cultural. We will have a whole new sense of pride and understanding about our nation's culture. And that step will have been made because of NEH. I think NEH will grow and will become an essential part of all public policy, not only education, but cultural and economic, because culture is related to economic development. And we grow as a community, as a region, and as a nation in direct proportion to our ability to know our history and our culture. In our recent book on the 35-year history of the agency, there's a preface by Stephen Ambrose in which he says, "I can't imagine an America without the NEH." And I think that will be the thought of every American in the coming years.
I want to thank you, Bill. I'm afraid we're out of time. I've enjoyed our conversation very much.
Thank you very much.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with William R. Ferris, Chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. To learn more about our programs and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. See you next week.